My name is Steve Fox. I work at Microsoft. My official title is Senior Technical Evangelist. The first time I told my dad I was an evangelist, he's an old Irish guy, right? I said, "Dad, I'm an evangelist." He goes, "What are you going to join the church for there, son?" I said, "No, no." My dad's never turned a computer on in his life, so just... Yeah, anyways, email Steve Fox, S-T-E-F-O-X. Like I said this morning, feel free to email if you have questions, my blog. I will post the decks out, although I'm only going to show you two slides of this deck, so that'll be good, right? One person, yeah. The others, we don't care. We're just here for lunch. All right, so let's start out talking a bit about evolution of SharePoint tooling. I've got two slides. I'm going to talk a bit about the evolution. I'll talk a bit about my development environment, how I install things on my environment so you get a sense for how I set things up. And then we'll jump in and just do a bunch of demos, okay? I'll try and work my way from simple to more a little more complex in terms of project templates, because some of the templates out there in Visual Studio are a little like, ooh, how does that work? So we'll kind of work through things like simple web parts to things like the BCS. And I'm going to do a drill down tomorrow for those of you who are interested in business connectivity services, which is kind of cool. I'll be doing that tomorrow. So that's kind of where I'll leave off today. That said, evolution. How many of you were actually building SharePoint applications in VS 2005? A few of you, right? So you're all, were you using VSC WSS or were you using like just native kind of classes and post builds and things like that? Yeah, post builds. Okay. So, you know, there was this thing called VSC WSS. I'm discovering more and more that people started using it and then they stopped using it. Kind of quickly. Sometimes it took people a little longer, but and then most people I found have been using the community tools, or they've been using just creating their own class libraries, right? Creating the file folder hierarchies, post build events, blah de blah. As we move forward, though, you know, we had sequential workflow, state machine workflow that was built for Visual Studio 2008. Out of the Office Development Group and DevDiv in Microsoft. And so it was kind of a partner effort within Microsoft. And then as we move forward here, we kind of get into VSC WSS 1.3, which is a rev on VSC WSS. And I think I actually liked using VSC WSS for some of the projects. I think the web part project was pretty functional and pretty good. And there was a couple other ones I liked too. You got 64-bit support, WSP view, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the real story begins. This is exciting. It starts with VS 2010. All right? Remember this morning I told you, and I showed you a few things this morning, but I told you basically that, hey, the story begins with VS 2010 because you actually have templates now. Cool? All right? How many people have actually used the beta to 2010? So a handful of you guys. And you're probably just playing around, right? Trying to create things, getting used to it. The rest of you haven't. And again, we'll spend most of the time today kind of walking through the UI, but it's awesome. Because basically what we have now is we have a concerted way to build and deploy SharePoint applications. Yay! Right? That's good news, right? That's good news, right? Yeah. All right, come on! All right, so setting up your development environment. You obviously require a 64-bit environment, at least... You know, there was a gentleman who asked me this morning about the 32-bit. I felt really bad in that response. But the point is, are you here? There you are, right there. I'm sorry, man. I'll buy you a beer later, right? It requires a 64-bit operating system for the most part. Windows 7, Vista Service Pack 1, Server and Server R2. Now, SharePoint 2010 must be installed locally if you actually want to debug against that instance of SharePoint. Remember, I told you that again this morning. And you'll see that, you know, as we created the project, went to the wizard, associated that particular SharePoint instance with that project, those two had to have some sort of relationship. And so when I think about how do I build my dev environment, when I have just, I've paved my laptop, my desktop, this is the thing that I do. I start, I install an operating system, of course. In my case, I typically use Windows Server 2008 R2. Because I like to have Hyper-V there as well, in case I want to create a VHD to take on the road. You know, that's the sort of thing. I want to have that flexibility. I also, the first thing I install is SharePoint 2010. Okay? Why? Because if anything happens, because it's beta software, I don't have to uninstall everything else or flatten my box and start all over again. Okay? It's kind of simple. Install SharePoint 2010 first and install SQL Server Express version so we get that out of the way. Next thing I do, I install the compatible version of Office 2010. Okay? And you guys will have these slides, so no, don't worry about writing stuff down. I'll give them out to you. So once I got those two installed, the next installation is SQL Server 2008. Get that installed, full version. Then it's Visual Studio 2010. Then my optional install is Expression Blend. Remember this morning I told you, you know, Expression Blend, I showed you that really awesome Silverlight application? You guys were like, should we applaud? Of course you didn't. Thanks. But if you want to do optional Silverlight application development, you can use Expression Blend. Okay? So that said, we're done with the slides. How does that feel? We're going to close out PowerPoint. Woo! Rock on. Okay. So first thing we're going to do is we're going to take a little tour of Visual Studio. Okay? For those of you who haven't seen it, this is Visual Studio 2010. The UI is a little different. It's WPF based, but what we're going to focus on, if I can get my finger on this guy right, there we go. We're going to focus on the SharePoint templates. So, first of all, let's take a look at the project level templates, because you have both project level templates and item level templates. What that means is I can build an empty shell of a project and add stuff to it, that stuff being item level templates, okay? So, in terms of the project level templates, let me just try and expand that. Can you all see that in the back? Yes, perfect. All right. First one, empty SharePoint project. I built a couple of these this morning, but basically it's just a shell project to which you can add other things. Okay? Visual web part. So you could think of this as the web part. Remember the old web part you built and you had to kind of code up the UI yourself? The visual web part gives you a designer experience to go along with that web part. So I can drag and drop controls, right? And that is my ACS, that's my user control display, or my user interface, rather. And that will kind of deploy along with your web part. The full trust proxy data, this is an extensibility project that Wouter built. It snuck its way in here, so I'm just going to politely go by it. He's going to talk about extensibility right after this session. A sequential workflow and state machine workflow, these are just two types of workflow. So basically, sequential would be activity A, activity B, activity C, and they kind of fire off these activities in sequential order. State machine is similar, but it looks for a state and then fires off the particular activities associated with that particular workflow. This one here, business data connectivity model, this is where if you want to integrate a line of business system with your SharePoint instance, and you can do it programmatically here, and you can build things like .NET objects, you can use XML files, you can even call a web service to SAP, pull some data back. And there's some data mapping going on here. The last project I'll show you is this one because it's a little tricky. And then tomorrow we'll spend a full hour and a quarter just on working on this alone, just because it kind of takes a little bit to wrap your head around. I showed you one of these event receivers. This is basically if you have a list, you want to associate an event with that list. Bada boom, there you go. List definition, so just a definition of a list that you can repurpose. Console app, there's another one of Wouter's extensibility projects. It gives us another opportunity, though, to make fun of his icon skills, right? 32. I was bugging him about that at lunch. He's like, yeah. So content type, we know what content types are, so that's another opportunity to build a content type using this particular project template. Module is interesting. I actually used module this morning, and I'll go into a little bit more detail. It's basically if you want to add a file and ship that file and get it down to the server with your project, you can use the module. Site definition. Build out a site, define it, everything like that. That's good. Reusable workflow, basically, if you've built a workflow in SharePoint Designer, you can import it into Visual Studio, add some workflow code to it. That is the reusable workflow. And, of course, import SharePoint Solution Package, WSP. Basically, you create a new, you import a WSP, and you can redeploy it into another farm. All right? Sound good? You got all that? Can you recite that back? Just kidding. So we're going to create a empty SharePoint project. And it's going to be my first project. Okay. Today. And we will create. Okay. So this is where, again, it asks us, do we want to validate, again, a particular instance of SharePoint? You can click that to validate. It's going to go out. It's going to say, hey, is everything okay? Can I connect up to this? To make sure that when I actually deploy my assemblies or my application, it's actually going to go somewhere and deploy it into Fabric Hockey, which is my local instance of SharePoint. So it successfully connected. awesome. I'm not going to deploy this as a sandbox solution, mainly because I'm going to add a couple things that may not be sandbox solutions. So I'm just going to keep it at the farm level. And what this means is going to deploy it into the GAC, is essentially is what that means, as opposed to deploying it in the bin. Okay? So I click Finish, and that sets up a folder hierarchy. Now, before I go any further, I'm going to let that set up. I just want to show you a couple other things in and around the interface here, because some new and interesting features within Visual Studio 2010 that are particular to SharePoint. Okay, so I'll go over here. First of all, let's take a look at the Server Explorer. Okay, I actually really like the Server Explorer because it actually gives you fairly discrete views into your objects on the server. So for example, content types, announcements, I can actually see the fields. Okay, for those of you who can't see that at the back, it's basically a node in the Server Explorer that represents my SharePoint site and just gives me all the native stuff I have in my SharePoint site and all the stuff that I would potentially add to that. So for example, if I build a custom workflow and deploy it into SharePoint, you'll see it eventually in the Server Explorer. If I do other things like build a list, custom list, whatever, you'll eventually see it in the Server Explorer when it refreshes. Okay? So it's just a nice little way to kind of have some visibility into your server. Yes, sir. Is it also possible to export a content type back into? We can right click and see. I've never done it, but no is the answer to that question. It's called real time learning. Yeah, no. Now I think you could build a WSP and then import that back as a separate WSP, but you're talking project to project. But one other thing here, let's take a look at the project properties, and let's kill this. Now, this is, you know, you're pretty typical. You look at these different project properties. For those of you who used Visual Studio before, you're familiar with this. But there's this one special little section here called SharePoint, and it provides you with some additional areas or additional things that you can do. So, for example, a gentleman asked me this morning, he goes, well, how do I integrate command shell commands into my project? And I totally forgot that there's actually these pre-deployment and post-deployment command lines. So the equivalent might be is if you were using VS 2005 and you were building post-build events, remember you were kind of adding stuff, put it there, that sort of thing, you could run a PowerShell commandlet from here to do other types of post-deployment type activities, whatever you wanted to do. But the point is you have a place to integrate your PowerShell commandlets with your applications, okay? Now, other things, if you want to, remember this morning I showed you, you deploy, it's got all those things that it does when it goes into the server, you know, it can retract another type of, or retract a similar type of assembly that you've dropped in there, those types of things. And I told you that you can configure some of the deployment activities. This is where you'd actually configure deployment. You can add or remove different types of events so that what you could do is you could make that deployment configuration as comprehensive as you wanted or as kind of slim as you wanted, depending on what you wanted to do. Okay? So this is just a place where you might go ahead and add some different steps into that deployment process. Okay? The point is, when you look at the user interface with Visual Studio 2010, this is a lot more different things that you can do in terms of features, more control. Somebody asked me this morning about editing XML files. For those of you who weren't in my session, the whole goal of Visual Studio 2010 is kind of get you away from having to edit those actual files and do a lot of the heavy work for you. Let you do the fun stuff and code, okay? All right. Where are we going next? So what we're going to do here is we are going to add a web part, okay? Excuse me. A little bit of lunch coming back up there. Too much information, sorry. I thought we were all kind of getting personal here, so. All right. So let me see here. My first web part. So this is basically I'm adding the project level items. So before I go any further, let me just kind of take a quick breath here. Now, we had the project level templates. Now, remember I told you, when you have an empty SharePoint project, you can add items to it. These are the items to which you can add. Of course, you can add all other types of .NET supported objects, but in the context of SharePoint, this is what you can add. So here you see, okay, I've got a visual web part, and I've got a web part and workflow and these types of forms and pages and things like that. So really you have a lot of the same options along with Wouter's extensibility project that keeps sneaking in this. I don't know, I think he's seated me for this. He's kind of the segue into his 4:15 presentation or something. But put a web part, get it in there, click add, and there we go. That's going to add a lot of different things in here. So again, we'll do a quick review for those of you who weren't in the session this morning. You can see that there's a bunch of things going on here. Now, let's take a quick look. Starting from the top, it adds some references in there. As we go down, it creates a feature. So maybe common deployment of packaging up as a WSP, it treats it as a feature, that web part. We've got a package. And then we've got three files that are specific to my web part. Okay, so if I go ahead and look at my web part is just like the XML file that you guys created before. And you can go ahead and say, well, okay, I'm going to amend this to say spcon web part en el lemo. Anybody speak Spanish? El lemo web part. Okay, so I got a somewhat intuitive title and description that will go along. So when someone actually likes to add this or wants to add this into SharePoint, they can say, oh, I know what that is. Okay? So that's that. We'll save that guy there, kill that guy. And then I don't really have to touch anything here in the elements because I don't really need to do anything, because basically the elements just works with the feature and basically says, okay, this file over here and this file over here, put them together, stitch it all, and that's our feature. So you shouldn't have to touch the elements at all unless you want to amend it. But I'm not going to. Okay, so at this point, we can say, okay, I want to create my web part. Before we go there, one other thing. So there's a new feature designer, and there's a new package designer. They're very similar, but they're nice because what you can do here are a couple different things. The first thing is this feature provides you with a kind of just a glimpse into the different files that would make up a particular feature. So in this case, I only have one feature because I'm building one web part. I've added it into my project. So there it is. And it's got the three files that we just talked about, the elements.xml, my web part class file, and my web part, my .web part, which is kind of my configuration file. Okay? Here's the cool part. I can scope this to a different level. Site, farm, web application, right? So you can do some configuration of how that feature is scoped right here from the feature designer. Okay? The other thing you can actually add, someone want to add something? Yeah. Yes, yeah, remember when I started this up and I said farm level, basically the CS file is deployed. Sorry, the CS file is deployed into the GAC on the server. Okay? So, and I'm sorry, this is driving me crazy. Yeah. No, I'm sorry, the DLL. Yeah, the built DLL. Sorry. Yeah. So basically what happens is when it goes through the actual process of building and deploying, it takes that CS file, creates the library, drops it into the GAC. Okay? You could, and I would, but I'm not going to. But you should. No. Yeah, no. This is the beta software, and I'll quickly show you something here, because this is one of the things that I've noticed with the beta software, and one of the reasons why when I'm using the beta software, I always create a shell project. So, for example, I'll go ahead and open this up and create a new project when it comes up. And you'll see that sometimes when you're creating a new project, and if you create kind of this, here, I'll show you rather than walk around and tell you. File, new, project. If I go just visual web part, right, and go project. Solution. The point is, I have more control over the renaming, and sometimes you don't have to do the edit, replace all, and go through it, blah, blah, blah. You know, and you see here, even though I've created a visual web part project, it actually creates a shell for me and then adds the visual web part underneath automatically. So for me, it's like, okay, hold on. I want to skip the whole edit replace all. It makes you a little more productive, right? Gives you more lunchtime. So the thing is, basically what I'm doing here is if I wanted to change the name, I'd have to right-click, rename, and go ahead. And I think this is going to be fixed for RTM. Just think of this as something that you're seeing in the beta. But this happens on a couple of different projects. So that's why I usually create my SharePoint project, then add the visual web part. Because when you add the visual web part as an item, it's all nice and named for you. Okay? All right. So let's get back to where we were. My first project today. So we were talking about this. The other thing here is I can actually add feature activation dependencies. I don't have any, but if you had some dependencies you wanted to add there, you potentially could. Let me see here. And the other thing I'll show you is the package. Just like you have a feature view, designer view, you actually have a package view. And this is just a different type of view that says, OK, here's how many features are in the package that I'm going to be deploying into the server. So again, a different type of view. Now, I believe I can validate this guy. Yeah, so I could right-click and validate. And what this means is, let's say you create an empty SharePoint project. You make it a sandbox solution, and then you add a visual web part, which cannot be deployed right now as a sandbox solution. It would not build for you. So you could validate before you go through the process of kind of coding it out to see if you could actually deploy it into SharePoint. And just by clicking validate, I could say, OK, help me understand if this is going to be good. And this is validation succeeded down the left-hand, left bottom part of the screen. So basically what that tells me is I can build and deploy this into SharePoint. OK? Right. Guys, you're like, where's the code? Get Nancy over here. All right, so let's do some coding. So basically what I'm going to build my own UI here. We're going to say web part controls declaration. And this is a web part, right? So we're going to create a label. Where the heck am I? Interesting. What's going on? Why isn't that resolved? Well, let's keep going. It should be okay. So I'm going to try and create some controls. And basically what we're going to do, let's go down here. And controls. Oops. We're going to add a couple of things. I'm going to add some properties assignments for those controls. And I'm going to add an event. So let me just walk through this. And I'm not sure if this is going to, I don't know why these aren't showing up. But basically what this is going to be, I'm going to build my own UI. It's going to be some labels and list boxes, and text boxes, and buttons, really cool UI stuff. I'm going to get, thank you. Showing off my UI capabilities again, it's so sad. And then within the properties, I'm basically just going to set some text properties and add some items, you know, to my list box. But more importantly, let's take a look at this guy right here. You can see that because I'm building out a web part, I'm kind of creating a literal control to kind of send that through and give it some structure. Do any of you guys do that? Am I the only goofball that does that? I guess so. Basically, this just makes it easy for me when I actually deploy it to have some predictability on what my web part's going to look like. Right? And the table structure is nice and kind of read through. You can add your controls, you know, between the little table and table row objects, so they actually look pretty decent when you actually deploy them. The last thing I will add here is a little event. And this is going to be my button click event. Now, it's less important. The calculation, the math is less important here than the actual event that's tied to a control in the web part, right? And so what happens here is basically just taking a value depending on what you're selecting. And if I enter in some value, it's going to return something in the context of a string and then populate the text box exchange. Now, I believe I've already deployed that. So let me just make sure that's there. Go ahead. Add a web part. We go into custom. So when you deploy a custom web part, this is where you're going to be able to find it. Okay. So I think it's the currency exchange or currency calculator, one of the two. What's that? Yes, you can. Yes. Cannot import this. Maybe it's the other one. But you can define your own categories. Let's stop editing first. Go back into edit mode. And I think you can actually add icons and things like that. You can pretty it up. I have not prettied it up, obviously. Add a web part. Go back to custom. I think I clicked this one. Let's try this one again. There we go. So, and basically what this does, the baseline is US dollars. And it's really depressing me because I'm going to click the currency I'm going to exchange into. I type $1,000, 10,000, 1,000, and what happens? $690. Euros. How sad is that? You guys should be taking a trip to the States and like, woo, shopping! But this is what it would look like, right, when you deploy this web part into SharePoint. And you notice I've got the literal controls. They don't show up because I don't have any, you know, borders, so it's not like you got this big, ugly table. Again, in terms of quick and dirty and easy, this is just a web part that shows, you know, an event that's tied to a button. But I kind of like the way that the web part self-structures using that literal control table. Any questions on that so far? Yes, sir? Multi-language support. You mean like literal languages, English, French, and whatnot? Resource files. Yeah, it's a great question. So I think there are some language packs that you can use in SharePoint. Okay, and I'm not sure programmatically how you could use them. We could probably talk offline, and I could find out for you. But I think that's generally how you would do it. It's interesting. I was at a user group meeting the other night when one of the guys asked me, he goes, "Hey, look, I have this problem. I'm accessing a list. I've built this application to access the list. The list right now is in English. However, I'm deploying it into a Portuguese territory. And you know that when you are trying to get data out of a list, you're accessing the name of that field. It's not a GUID, right? And so it's a problem. I mean, there are some issues that you're going to come across in regards to kind of globalization of your web parts. But that said, there is a manageable way around it. We were talking about using generics and things like that and not so much referring to the exact field or having some sort of process whereby he's using a dictionary to transfer some of this stuff. I don't know. But it's not an uncommon problem, and maybe we can talk offline and figure out a way that we can help you. So that's it. That was the simple web part. What we're going to do now is jump into another demo. Let me go over here now. Any other questions while loading this up? Sometimes this takes a sec to load. I don't know why. Let's go into design view. I'll talk a bit about what I'm going to show you here. So I just showed you the creation of a SharePoint project, the addition of, I think this one's mine. Uh-oh, yeah. Should be okay. We're all friends, right? I'm going to show you, what I showed you was a web part project, and I added just a regular web part. Here what we've got is, again, I've got that shell project, and I've added an Ajax visual web part. What that means is when my display eventually comes up, you'll see that part of my application is wrapped in an Ajax update panel, and the other part is not. How many people actually use Ajax in SharePoint right now? So a few of you, right? Who put their hand up? Someone over here did. Now, how do you feel about the experience? Do you like the experience? When do you use it? When don't you use it?
I don't like it.
He doesn't like it. Do you all feel the same about that, or you do like it? I think it's interesting, and I think depending on how you use it, it can be good and it can be bad, right? So the update panel specifically, if you look at this here, I'm actually loading some data. I'm calling, if we look at the code behind, we'll go ahead, and basically my design experiences, again, are fairly lame, but my Ajax panel is wrapped around this data grid, okay? I click the load button. It uses, you know, a web service call into a list, grabs some data, spins through, creates an object, and populates a data grid. It also dynamically creates calculates the average. And just some player stats are coming back, and I'll see the list in just a sec. That's wrapped in an update panel. Okay? And the reason I did that is because it can cause a problem for your users, and I wanted to show you how it could cause a problem for your users. Down below, we have just an added player stat. So once you've loaded your players into a data grid, you can then add some player information, click add, and that'll add that to the list. So it's basically reading and writing from a data. Okay? However, the problem begins if I'm actually coding this data grid, and basically all I've done here to get here is gone into View Toolbox, for those of you who haven't done this before, and I've just dragged and dropped some controls onto the surface, okay? And you can double-click, and that will add an event handler in your code behind, all right? Simply put. Now, if we look at the source, this is where you can see my AJAX. Here's the update panel, and the whole goal of AJAX is to kind of avoid the post-back flicker, you know? But some cases, that might be good. In a list service call, where it might take some time, you're going to leave your user hanging, right? So when you design your applications, think about, should I leave them hanging for more than 5 seconds, wondering if this is going to, you know, the service is going to resolve? Or should I maybe have a progress indicator or something like that, right? And that's where AJAX can be good. It could be bad. So think about your performance. Think about things that you're actually building and you're wrapping inside of that AJAX control before you actually go ahead and implement it, okay? So when we look at the code behind and here in terms of the template, basically I've got some buttons. There's my first control or set of controls. And the second one, again, I'm just wrapping in a table. No AJAX control. And I have some click event down here somewhere. Here we go. So it's a button edit click. So if you go back to the code behind, you'll see that I've got this list player stat. And player stat is basically an object that represents my player stats. And I think if we go over here, we might be able to see this right quick without hockey stats. There it is there. And that's what it's pulling back. It's pulling back a bunch of information. So the name of a player, the goals and assists and penalty and minutes that they've got, and the amount of the games they've played. Now, what happens is when that information comes back, I'm dynamically calculating a value. And we can see that down here. So again, I've got some formatting I'm actually exerting on the actual data grid this time. So you can see here I've got cell padding. I'm using a particular CSS class. You know, these types of things to give my data grid a little bit of formatting. You know, right? No, maybe not. So in this case, guys, you're a tough crowd. Bunch of designers out there. They're like, oh, CSS. So here you can see now. I'm proving out that you can use, and I just wanted to test that out to see if you could actually use the client object model on the server, on a visual web part. So you can. That's all I was doing here was saying, does it work? It works. All right. And again, this is where, if you look here, SP Client OM, client context, I talked a bit about this morning, setting up the client context of my particular site. You actually don't have to hard code the site. You can use current.context.url or something like that. I can't remember the exact, you know, syntax, but you don't have to actually set the specific, you know, hard-coded URL. Again, I'm going to get my hockey stats, get my title, get that list. I'm going to load the player stats list, and I'm going to execute that query. Again, client object model is all about kind of loading up the queue and then batch executing that query through the execute query. Camel. Who loves camel? Oh, I love camel. Come on. Could spend all day just creating camel constructs. She's like, no, heavens to Betsy, no. All right, so this is like the easiest camel query you'll ever see in your whole life, all right? View. Just grabs a view of the data coming back, right? And the thing I just wanted to illustrate is I can create this camel query. Well, I don't want to do that. Create this camel query, and then you can see over here that I'm actually passing it through when I call the getItems method. So it's just you can create a camel query, and with client object model, you can pass it through. But you're creating that camel construct. So when someone says to you, client object model, no more camel, you know what you say to them. Well, Steve told me different. Okay? And you can get away if you do like a select all and just get all the information. You don't really need camel. But if you want specific information, you still will have to pass in some degree of camel to get that information back. But it does avoid having to kind of parse through and look for the specific OWS, you know, XML fields. You know, you've all done that, right? And you've all enjoyed it, I can tell. Okay, so here we go. And now I'm going through each of the list items that have been returned. And you can see here that here's where, and this is where I get into the geographical problem, right? Because look, I am actually saying temporary list item, I'm referring to a specific field called title. And another thing in 2010, you still have the issue. No matter if you change the title field to something else, you still have to program it as it reads title. Okay? You all know that, right? Okay, cool. And then, no? Okay. Goals, assists, PIM, games. But the thing is, it's all in English, right? And this kind of gets back to our discussion before. But the thing is, I'm pulling that back. Now, notice that I've got this temporary stats player average. I'm bringing data back, and I'm passing it into a method, doing a dynamic calculation, and then I'm actually populating my object, and then data binding that to my data grid. So effectively what's going to happen is I'm going to add some stuff, one column with a calculation into my data grid. Y'all with me so far? Y'all still excited? Or do we need to get some beer in here? Come on, beer. Woo, beer. Okay, maybe not. All right. So, and this is basically where I'm going to add the player. So you saw the read. This is the write. Fairly similar syntax. Okay. Still using the execute query, using update. But what I'm doing is I'm just saying whatever they've entered in there, take it and add it. Okay. Same thing. Then I go build, deploy. It's going to deploy into SharePoint. It will actually, as I showed you this morning, it'll retract the one I already deployed before lunch, because I like to make sure my stuff works before I get up here and embarrass myself. And so we should see this if we go into our site. Site actions, we can edit the page. And I'll get rid of this just to clean up the page. Yep. And add a web part. It'll say custom. There's my Ajax player stats web part. And you can see here a visual web part that leverages Ajax to render stats data. For those of you who didn't know, excuse me, that comes from the .web part file. Remember I changed that title description before? You're seeing the title, Ajax player stats web part here, visual web part. And you can ask this really ugly icon to the left. Let me just go in there. The really ugly icon, you can actually customize that if you wanted to. I can't recall off the top of my head how, but you do it in one of the XML configuration files and just refer to an image. It actually plops it in there. So you can pretty it up if you wanted to. So we got that selected. We'll select add. Okay. We'll stop editing. Now, herein lies the issue. Remember I wrapped this top one with Ajax? We are going to click load. All right. Now imagine you're a user. Dun, 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 dun. What's going on, right? Oh, there it is. That was quick. Wow, imagine that. It usually took like 5 minutes before. Now it's really quick. So that was great. So, but if it was longer, you could see how the problem would extend, right? It was just sitting there. There's no progress indication as to what's going on. So great. It read. Does it write, though? That's the key. So player. We'll say Joey Denali. Games 6. Goals. He's got no goal. No, give him one goal. One assist, 40 penalty in minutes. This guy's crazy. We're going to add him. Done. Load. There we go. Nice, huh? Pretty cool. Wow. What do I have to code up here to get you guys to, like, just... No, just kidding. Yeah, So it's... But basically... Used the Ajax and non-Ajax, you know, used the client object model on the server, used, you know, the visual web part. So the thing is, you can actually, and imagine if you actually applied some better formatting here to this, you could make it look a heck of a lot better, okay? Very simply. And again, I coded this up, not too much time. Yeah? Syntactically, yes. It will be different syntax, okay? You know, conceptually, it's doing pretty much the same thing, but the syntax would be different. But think about this, right? Because there's a couple different ways you could do it on the server. You could use the using curly brackets, right, to get your context, and then have your kind of syntax in there. And that's, you can imagine if we go back to the project and look at, let me see, where were we here? This is pretty, you know, this is pretty similar, right? Remember you call the update method, you set those fields. I mean, that's pretty similar to what you have today. The difference is how do you wrap that? And you wrap that with the using curly, set your context, and go from there. In this case, we're saying SP context, you know, and that's how we do it. So would I recommend using this over the other? No. In fact, if I was going to do it, I would probably use a server object model. It's probably more performant. If you've got something living on the server, you might as well use a server object model, right? But the client just allows you to call from a remote client. Yep. Is it strictly? Yeah, MVC, that's a lot of compatibility there, right? So the client object model is not strictly web form, right? You can use it in Silverlight, you can use it in JavaScript, you can use it in .NET, so WinForm/WPF. I haven't tried it in MVC, but I know that there's some incompatibilities there or some issues you need to jump through. There was a question over here. Yeah. Yeah, no, it does. So basically what's going on, that's a great question. The question was, or maybe the statement was, does the client object model use the web service? That's exactly what's going on. Client object model calls the Lisp web service, but what it's doing is trying to take care of some of that heavy lifting with the CAML constructs and all that stuff. It's trying to take care of some of that parsing for you, right? And it's also running SP link against the stuff coming back. So it's almost treating the XML as, I don't know, strongly typed for lack of a better description, to pull it back and then get it into the data grid. Okay. Now, do you want to break something? Let's break something. You got, come on, let's break something. Throw stuff around. No? Come on, guys. Please? You'll break something? Cool. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to break something. And the only reason I want to do this is just to illustrate how you have to be careful when you're building full trust solutions or farm level solutions versus sandbox. Okay? So I'm going to go over here, and this is my first project today. So let's create a new project, and this will be a quick break. So we go ahead, and we say empty SharePoint project. We'll go ahead and say break me. Say OK. No, I don't want to save that. And then we're going to deploy this as a sandbox solution. Yeah. So remember what I was talking about before? You kind of have to be careful when you've got these parent projects and what you add underneath. If we add underneath a visual web part project, who can guess what's going to happen? Kind of set this up already, right? It's going to break. And again, you could go into the package. Remember I showed you the package before and right-click and validate, and it would tell you that it would fail. Or you could actually try and build it, and this should fail if we try and build it. So let's try. And the reason I'm showing you this is because Visual Studio now you clap? You clap at that? Oh my god. Oh, wow. Kick me while I'm down, don't you all? That should have broken. I think I might be issuing a bug when I get back to Redmond. No, that should have broken. So basically maybe I did the wrong way. It should have broken. Well, no, it should actually break if you have the visual web part inside. So the visual web part, it can't be deployed as a sandbox solution. Yeah. Yeah, no, this actually breaks. It should break because I did this at lunch. I don't know why it's not breaking now. We're going to move on to our next demo, which is going to be Silverlight and SharePoint. Who's excited about that? Yes.
Is this a sandbox terminology? Is it the same as what was code access security?
It's not the same thing, but it's equivalent, right? Basically, the sandbox solution runs in a specific process, right? And so when you deploy something like a sandbox solution, it can only run within that process. And there's guarded metrics against that particular process. So if you have a memory leak, for example, on your web part, let's say it's just continuing to spin out of control, your sandbox solution will get shut down. So it's kind of a special place within SharePoint where you can run these things. It runs at the site collection level. The point is, with a sandbox solution, I don't need to go to my farm level at admin and say, hey, can I, you know, can you help me out here with my WSP? You can actually, as the admin owner for your site collection, you can just pull in and drop WSPs in there, and they'll run in a ring fence.
So can you still do code access security for your solutions?
Yeah, I believe you can, but I'm not sure about the sandbox solution, Codex Security. I think that there'd be two different things. Yeah. Okay, so where was I? D4. So I know a few of you are coding in Silverlight and SharePoint. Silverlight and SharePoint I'm actually pretty excited about. Basically what I'm going to show you here, I showed you an example this morning of a Silverlight application. Now, the Silverlight application was self-contained. It had no interaction whatsoever with SharePoint. In this case, what I'm going to show you is an example of a Silverlight application that is actually consuming, I think it's a service. I think in this one I used the service because I wanted to prove out legacy ASP.NET services working in SharePoint. And so what we're doing here is as soon as my UI comes up, I'm going to go into a list, I'm going to grab some data, and if you click on the list, it's going to populate this other part of the Silverlight application with an image. Again, you know, this is just illustrative of just trying to hook this stuff up. So we'll give it a sec. It's loading. I really hope that this UI impresses you. Come on, it's got green in it. You guys are so tough. Man. All right, so the list box here. It's got a little bit of a shadow on it because I wanted to be kind of cool and funky. I had my black turtleneck on when I was doing this. So I had the list box, got the load. So when I click the load, it's going to call a web service, and it's going to populate the box. I click the list an item in the list box, and it's going to put an image in the TV. Now, we'll just take a quick look at the code behind. If we look at the code behind here, I'm actually using the list service. Okay, this you could think of as legacy. But this is still in 2010 and deployed to 2010, okay? Now, the one thing I didn't do, I didn't build this on 2007 and upgrade this to 2010. I probably should have just to test it out to see that path. But I would encourage you, if you do have some list service code kicking around in 2007, migrate it, see what happens. It should theoretically be fairly seamless to move up, but you know, I think there's a couple small changes that you might want to look out for. So here again, we're creating a query. You know, just grabbing that list data back, creating a query. And in this case, you can see that the get list items is async. Because in Silverlight, Silverlight's asynchronous. So there's two calls, one to actually start the call and one to manage the completion of that. And you can see here that when my get list items is completed, a bunch of stuff is going to happen. Okay, I'm going to create an X document and parse out the results. And then remember before when I was saying you have to look for the OWS string? This is what I'm doing here. Okay, list service, grabbing some of the XML, then looking for specific fields, and then kind of adding that to the list box's item source. Okay, and then I'm just changing the image depending on what you select. Now, here comes the interesting part. Here's what I've done here, and I talked a bit about this morning, but I'll talk more about it now. I also added a WebPart project to this because basically when I deploy my Silverlight file, I want to deploy it in one foul swoop. Okay? I don't want to take my Silverlight object or my application, put it in my Zaps library, copy the shortcut, open up my Silverlight media, put the shortcut in there and click OK. You could totally do that, and that's totally fine. Right? But again, this morning, remember when I said if someone goes in there and removes your Zap file if they have access to it? Duh! Guess what happens to your Zap file and your web part? It goes away, right? So you want to be careful of that type of thing. So what I did here was created a web part. To that web part project, I added a module. Remember what I told you about the module? It contains files, right? And so you can see here that in my file, so first of all, let's just take a look at something here. Created a project dependency. So I've got a web part and Silverlight application. I build my web part project, it goes down and says, I got to build my Silverlight application. So no matter what changes you have down here, it's always reflected up here in your web part. Okay? That's the first thing. Second thing, added the web part here, which basically has fairly simple code. It just has an SL stream code string object, which is just a big goop of string. But basically what this is doing, This is writing through a div object, which is going to refer to where my Sobolet application is going to live on the server. Okay? And I write it through with a literal control, sending that string through. Okay? You could equally take this code here. Let me just... No, but actually, you could build a sandbox solution with this as well. Yes, yes. Yep. Yes, but because, well, you could do it as long as the file is actually, I think, accessible within the context of the site collection. I think those might be the boundaries. But you could literally take this same code here between the scripts, and you could copy and paste that into a master page and refer to a Sobolet application as part of JavaScript embedded in your master page. Okay? So this code here is kind of multi-purpose. I deliberately did that so I could write it through, or you could grab it and kind of use it in a master page if you wanted to as well. All right, where the literal part is, where it's actually referring to the Sobolet application, is this zap bin sobolet application.zap. So it's basically taking the Sobolet application, it's building it because we're building the web part. Then my module, if you look at my module here, go ahead, is just saying, hey, create a zap bin for me. Okay? Create a zap bin. File path is called spsilverlightapplication.zap. And so then it's going to create a zap bin. It's going to stick the Silverlight application in there. And then whenever that web part comes up, it's going to look for the reference. Okay? Yep.
There is a default Silverlight web part.
Yeah, absolutely. You could definitely use that one. That's what I was saying, right? You could, and let's jump in and I'll show you. Okay? The difference is, if I deploy this, it's going to deploy it, right? It's going to deploy it directly into here. And I can just open up and add this, and I've inserted the web part that I just deployed. Okay? And we can see it run.
Is it easier in 2010 setting up the web config?
There is no setup of web config. So the question was, is it easier in SharePoint 2010 to set up the web.config? Hells yeah. There is no setup. So out of the box, SharePoint supports Silverlight. That's why I'm saying when in SharePoint 2010, you're going to see Silverlight take off a little bit. For those of you who don't know, in 2007, you had to amend the web.config, add safe controls. There is no Silverlight object, though. There's no DLL in Silverlight 3, right? You can run them side by side if you wanted to, but that's why you've got this other code there that's kind of the writing through the object. Okay? So here you can see my very stylish web part, if I might say so myself. Oh, God. Thanks. Another beer over here. I owe you one. Okay, just keeping tabs. So I click the list box, and it adds in an image that I've got kind of in the assembly or in the package, and it updates some information at the bottom. But the point is, I'm interacting with SharePoint, so this is a deeper integration with SharePoint. You could certainly write back to SharePoint if you wanted to. This is just doing some reading. But the point is, think about it. Think about it if you have a scenario where all of a sudden you want to pull in SAP data. You want to pull in Siebel data. You want to use Silverlight as your business application interface. And you want to write some data back into SharePoint. It provides you with a really good design opportunity. And that's why I'm saying Expression Blend might become part of your toolkit. Because then you can build some very, very compelling applications in the context of SharePoint, pulling data from external sources, but with a completely kind of revised user experience. You see where I'm going? Much prettier than that, right? You're supposed to say, no way! That's super pretty. All right, so the other thing I could do to your question down here, I think it was you, wasn't it? You were asking about the out-of-box Silverlight web part. Somebody asked down there, so excuse me. So let's get rid of this here. You what?
I would never do that.
Why is not? Why not?
No,
oh, okay. Can you download my web part? This is going to turn into an all-out brawl. I can just feel it. All right, so you click Add a Web Part, and you can see here that if we go into Media and Content, this is the Silverlight web part that someone was asking about. I click Add, but what does it look for? It looks for a URL. So that URL has to point off to somewhere, and the somewhere in this case is me putting my ZAP file in a document library and copying the shortcut and sticking in that field. So it'll totally work. And that's exactly what I just did. So this is a closed API. You can't. The Silverlight web part here is closed. There's no public API here. Yeah, there's multiple ways we can do it, right? The way I was showing you just kind of avoids having to upload it to a document library. So, yeah. Multiple ways to get there. So we're sitting at 4 o'clock here. So, but I think the key takeaway here is I think there's a lot of promise in Silverlight. And so I think it's an interesting area, especially when we start talking about building these interesting designs. How you deploy it, you know, Silverlight, your way, this way, whatever. There's some documentation out there that covers, I think, 2 or 3 ways. So exciting, exciting stuff. What am I going to cover next? Okay, I think I'm going to cover SharePoint for Link. And I think, just given our time, I'm going to just open up the the project. I had a pre-built project. So SharePoint for Link. I talked a bit about this morning, but I did not show you an example. Okay? Now, there's a couple things going on here. First of all, there's this entities.cs. Okay, so if I were to build out and try and use SharePoint Link, the first thing I have to do is use this tool called SPMetal. Everybody heard of SPMetal? No? It's basically a tool you run inside the bin, inside SharePoint root, and you can run it against your SharePoint site, and it creates basically an entities list out of your list. So essentially, you can treat your lists like an entity data model. Okay? So you can see here that I've got this entities. That was the entities file that was generated. I'll be right there with you. Entities file that was generated. So it allows me to actually code against my lists. Okay? And here is my entities data context. And you can see that within the entities data context is this link statement. And this is effectively SharePoint for Link. I created the entities, added the entities to my project. One other thing I did, I'll just show you here, is microsoft.sharepoint.link. You actually have to add that into your project in order to be able to actually leverage, obviously, the classes within the namespace, okay? Yeah? It's a great question. There are some community efforts right now underway. In fact, I think Wouter is the guy who's going to be presenting after me. He's done a lot of extensibility work, and I believe he actually has a community SPMetal project built into Visual Studio. Yeah?
The SPMetal has to be run against an existing list.
You run it against a site. No, I think you, I believe you run it against a site, and it grabs everything in there, and it kind of creates the. Yeah. You basically create the entities, pull it in, and then you kind of code against the entities, the context. And so here again, if we go and we just deployed this, if I go in, click Site Actions, edit the page, and add this. Custom, where are you? Custom. Visual Web Part, I think that was it. So intuitively named. Visual Web Part 1, my Visual Web Part. Doesn't really make any sense at all. But this will actually expose a data grid. Now, the nice thing is when you actually use SPLink, you can see here, hopefully you can see if you can, it's kind of light, but in the back you can see here that I've actually got some ordering that I've enforced on the table. Okay? So you can do things like that when we're actually trying to present data. So it's a little nicer in terms of formatting, presentation, that type of thing. And obviously, this is a super, super dirty type of presentation. I've just done a bunch of write-through with a literal control. If you actually look at the code, it's basically creating a stream writer and just writing a table with the information in it. But you could pretty it up in a much nicer way. Yeah. You can, yeah. Yeah, you can write back. So you've got read-write. I basically just read in this case, but you can. I think in general, When we think about lists in 2010, the capabilities of reading and writing against lists is much, much improved over 2007. You know, SPLink, Client Object Model, WCF, so those three just alone, and REST APIs. So again, you've got that read-write capability there as well. Yeah, without the designer. Just pointing it all out, aren't you, down there? it's all good. All right, so we're about 4:05. Any other questions I'm going to go through? Yeah?
You can join Swarm.
I believe you can. I haven't tried it, but I believe you can. Yeah? I hope so. Yeah, any other questions? Yeah? Yes. But you can basically, if you click F5 and put a breakpoint in, and when you add it, it should come back to your breakpoint. So it automatically attaches. So great. The question was, what about debugging in Visual Studio 2010? And so if I'm debugging an application, I would, you know, just like you would normally debug an application, I set a breakpoint, just like here, and then I would deploy it. And what I would do is I would insert the web part and then click a button, let's say, and let's say I had the breakpoint on that button event. It would pop back into my instance here. So it's really, really nice debugging experience in 2010. Automatically attaches to the worker process, all that good stuff. All the stuff that you would expect to find as a developer in SharePoint development. And seriously, right? F5, woo, yeah, finally, right? So it's there. So good stuff. How does it look with unit testing? Yeah, I mean, that's, what's that? Is there a session on unit testing? I just did one.
There is a problem, though, if you run an integration test from a unit test project,
yeah.
Runs your 32-bit.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Will that be fixed in the final?
I don't know. I really don't know. The question was about 32, 64, cross-bit testing problems, things like that. I just don't know the answer to that.
What if I wanted to deploy somewhere in the 12 high, let's say control templates?
No. Nope. So Visual Studio 2010, unfortunately, totally sorry, is geared towards SharePoint 2010. Okay? Now, that's not to say that, hey, what if I wanted to build a class with some post-build events in Visual Studio 2010, and get it in SharePoint 2007, you could still do that. But the point is, you know, 2010 works with 2010.
If you make a copy of the Hive structure, is there a way to deploy from the tool set in Visual Studio to those specified folders?
Potentially, but A, it would be unsupported because you'd probably be changing some things that I don't even know what you'd change. There's probably a few things you'd need to change, but it would be unsupported. So I think just my blanket answer is generally no. You know, your developers, you're going to find a way. We know that, right? Yeah? Deploy. It's a redeploy.
So if you have some test data there, you
have
to restage that.
Yeah, you will. And so the one thing I showed you this morning, but if I go ahead and build and deploy, it's going to retract whatever you've actually put out there. So if you do have other types of data, like for example, tomorrow in BCS, I've got a complex data structure where I've got a service, I've got a BCS project that consumes the service. You know, every time I change something, I have to refresh the service, then redeploy. You know, but once you get into that kind of process, it's not that painful. I don't want to say trust me because I don't know your personal like kind of thing, but it hasn't been that bad for me. Yeah.
Does the team for IT Server T-Build support the deployment of SharePoint?
Yes, but I think there's some build scripts you'd probably have to write there. I'm not sure exactly what you would have to write, but I know there's some. There's something you'd have to do there. I think there's an ALM session this week, is there not? If not, see me, and I've got someone I can point you to get you more information. Okay, so I've got 5 minutes. I want to show you one last project here. You guys still excited? Yeah, all right. Now I'm starting to feel it. I'm getting scared every time you put your hand up. I just want to... Excuse me, another problem over here. What's up? Oh, yeah, so there are... So the 2007, right, there's only two templates. I thought I mentioned this, but I'll mention it here. There's only two templates. It's the sequential and state machine workflow. So all the other stuff you can't deploy, but nothing. Yeah. Just, okay. What was that? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Really? He was saying that I should refer you back to WSP Builder. If I wanted, yeah. Yeah, it'll still work. A lot of people use WSP Builder. I'm surprised. What's that? Oh, yeah, that too. But that's the point, right? We had multiple tools, and we should really just have one tool. Sorry about that. I say that with the deepest of sympathy. I'm not being snarky. I you know, these are design decisions that were, you know, above my pay grade. So, all right, BCS model, the last demo. So I'm going to do a session, a drill down session on this tomorrow. The BCS, as I mentioned, you can use this to integrate line of business data into SharePoint. You can do it programmatically. So what's going on here? Is basically when you create a BCS model. How many people created application definition files in 2007? How many people enjoyed it? So basically in 2007, you used the business data catalog definition editor, right? Remember that experience? Guys like, oh God, I saw that. It was a shiver. It was a shiver that went up your back. But it was the BDC definition catalog editor, and you went in there and you created this XML file and you imported it into SharePoint, into the central admin, et cetera, et cetera. Well, in much the same manner, basically what's happened in 2010 is that this ADF, this metadata model that ties the back-end systems into SharePoint has evolved. You have CRUD operations, okay? Create, read, update, delete. And you can one of the ways in which you can create is in SharePoint Designer. The other way is with Visual Studio. Now, the nice thing about Visual Studio is you can imagine that I've got my entity definition here, right? And so if, for example, I'm using SAP, I'm kind of picking on SAP because I do a lot of work with SAP companies that want to leverage SAP. So imagine I've got an SAP service. I want to bring in that data. I model it here in my class. And then over here, if you look at the service that corresponds to that class, I've got a couple of things. I've got a read item, a read list. These are just two of the baseline methods that you need. I could effectively bring data in, model it, present it in my external list. And I'm kind of doing some work here to model that actual data coming back. But essentially, that's what you're doing with this BCS metadata model. And if you look at the BDC model here, you've got different methods. I can go ahead and, let me see here, I'll pull this up. I can go ahead and add different types of methods. So I've got read and read list. I can go down here and add a method. Let's just zoom in on that. You can see I can create a creator, deleter, finder, all different types of methods. And I realize for some of you, you may never do this, and it's very specific knowledge. But I wanted to call it out because, A, some developers feel this is kind of an obscure type of template. And they're not sure what to do with it. Well, what you do with it is you actually define some data. You may get that data from an external data source, and you deploy it into SharePoint. However, remember when I showed you that web part with the Silverlight application? Imagine you have an external list, SAP data coming in. You deploy the list. You deploy a Silverlight application that consumes that list in a web part that goes along with it, right? All of a sudden, now you can see a package solution that consumes this BCS using this BCS data. So there's definitely a place for it with these nice composite applications where you're actually bringing in that line of business data, okay? So just kind of getting the juices flowing inside your head. Tomorrow, I think they have internet connectivity here. I hope they do. I have a presentation where I'll walk through this in greater detail. And we'll kind of walk through how do you map out a model, how do you build it, how do you build these web services, how do you pull them in and kind of connect them up, and maybe just walk through some of the machinations of how you do that. Okay. With that, we have 2-3 minutes left, so maybe I'll do one. Yeah, I'll just kind of open it up for a couple more questions, because we do have to be out of here to let the other fella come in and get set up. So, any final questions? Yeah. Good question. The question was, are workflows in SharePoint 2010 still 3.5? Yes. So, to be clear, SharePoint 2010 is built on 3.5 Service Pack 1, okay? So you are targeting 3.5 when you're building applications for SharePoint right now. I don't know when that's going to be upgraded or changed, potentially a Service Pack release. That's up to the product group. But right now, just remember, whenever you're targeting 3.5. No, it's not true. So you're right. It comes with, but if, let's say I go in here, create file, new project. I go in here, 2010. I target a specific framework. Okay, for those of you who can't see that in the back, I can target 2, 3, 3.5, 4. This is how you would actually specifically target a .NET framework. And then that way, you shouldn't have any assembly problems. Because and I've had some beta assembly, you know, dependency issues, but typically when you either reset the properties to be 3.5, is that 0 minutes or 1 minute? 2 minutes. We got some time. Woo! Thanks, time man. All right. So yeah. Well, first of all, you can't target .NET 4 when you're building for SharePoint right now.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah. So you can't do it. Yeah, you'll get dependency issues. In fact, you won't even get to IIS. You'll get dependency clash issues inside your assemblies. There was a question over here. Are you sure? Changed your mind? Yeah.
You talked about the web.config supporting Silverlight out of the box in 2010. Does it also support Ajax and Link?
Yes. Yes. And when you add, like in the user control, when you add the Ajax control, from Visual Studio, at least it, okay, so let me caveat. It supports the controls that are available in the toolbox. Okay, if you add other ones, I'm not sure if it supports those, but it definitely supports the ones that are actually in the toolbox. So you drag and drop, it adds the appropriate references for you in the ASCX file. Cool? One more question. Yes, sir. How off topic? Are we talking football? You can create site definitions. I'm not sure. I'll be honest with you. I haven't built a site definition in 2010. My guess would be I'm sure there's some improvements. I imagine they're infrastructural improvements. You still have to define it with all the different configuration files, the ONX, whatever. Yeah, so I think you'd still have to define it in the same manner. It'd still be time-consuming because you're still dealing with the XML config files, but probably the way in which you deploy it is much easier, those types of things. Certainly, you know, across the board for all the templates, like build, deploy, retraction, all that stuff is built in. So that will be easy. The time-consuming process of XML, I think that's consistent, okay? Sorry to say that. All right, so I think that we'll call it a day. Hopefully we'll see you having a beer in about an hour, yeah? Or sooner?